I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the Brexit Ready podcast from Audio UK. We're talking to people in or around the audio business in Britain, as well as getting expert opinion on what the landscape might be after Brexit and how companies should prepare. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty right now, and even after a deal is struck or not struck, things may, of course, change again. As we look at the future outside the single market and possibly the customs union, there are a range of possible changes which could affect British companies. Now, these areas could be as broad-ranging as whether you'll need a visa or new driving licence to do business in mainland Europe, how to ensure that data transfers with other EU countries can continue, and how goods and services can be traded. Well, Andrew Hood has over 20 years' experience of working on the EU as a lawyer and negotiator. He worked for the UK government for 13 years, including for former Prime Minister David Cameron as General Counsel. He now works in private practice and advises companies about EU regulation and trade. Thank you very much for joining us, Andrew.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, obviously, a lot of uncertainty. We don't want to get caught down, I suppose, the rabbit hole of policy so much at the moment, but just generally so much confusion around this. Can you just make it a little bit clearer for us? When we talk about things like a deal or a no deal, what exactly are we talking about?
Well, that's a great question, because we often just follow so closely the minutiae of every in and out of the political discourse and wrangling at the moment, we forget what they're actually talking about. And what a deal means is really our divorce arrangement. So on what terms do we leave the EU? How much money do we pay? What rights do we give to EU citizens living in the UK and to Brits living in the EU? As well as things about how we will control our regulations and our tariffs and borders. So it's really about the divorce arrangements. If there is a deal, what that means is that business will continue as usual pretty much for the next 13 months until a new free trade agreement is in place between the UK and the EU, and we've got a new trading relationship that will last us for a generation. That's if we get a deal. That's the good scenario in the Brexit context. If there's no deal, that simply means that we've got no arrangements about what will happen to Brits in the EU, to EU nationals over here, to how products will pass between the UK and the EU, and how we'll transfer data and all the things you were talking about at the very start. So the difficulty with no deal is that there's just lots of uncertainty that's out there and a lot more friction in our trading relationships, in our lives between the UK and the EU.
It's important that you point out that this is the divorce part, because there's a whole new life, I suppose, afterwards that's going to take place. This is the hard part, almost starts afterwards, where we start negotiating deals and trying to work out the general landscape.
That's absolutely right. I mean, bearing in mind that 2 years ago, David Davis said this was going to be the easiest deal in history. And here we are, 3.5 years on, and we're still wrangling over the three big issues around Northern Ireland, people and money. And yet we've got really the entire free trade agreement, our future with the EU, to negotiate yet. And at the moment, the arrangements allow for about 13 months. So even if we get through the parliamentary process this week, and in November we've got a deal, the big question then is, what does that future free trade agreement look like? What does that future long-term deal look like? And that, at the moment, we have 13 months to negotiate. Now, bearing in mind, these normally take 3, 4, 5 years, even with partners that we have good trading relationships with, like Canada already. So they're often invariably very complex. It might be that this one is a little simpler, because what we're not doing is bringing two different economies together through a deal, but actually, really, we've got economies already in the form of the UK and the EU that are already very closely aligned. So really, it's about managing any divergence, any separation. But this has never really been done before in the international trade world. So although in theory it might be simpler, because it's so new, it might actually still be quite complicated and take quite some time.
Before we explore more into those, the sort of likely impact deal, no deal, where are we now? You spoke there about, 3.5 years. We've been wrangling over what sort of divorce deal we would have. What has that done, or how has that impacted businesses already up until this point in terms of planning, how much money they've set aside for this, all of the general confusion?
Well, the short answer is, no one has ever quite calculated how much it's cost business and the UK economy as a whole across the board. But clearly, companies have not been investing because they don't know what the future might hold, whether they're going to be having to have a presence in the EU or whether they can keep their presence in the UK. And they don't want to set up and waste costs unnecessarily. But it also means that not necessarily investing in the UK either. So part of it is what's not happened that we'll never quite know. Just take one example with the automotive industry, where they have said preparing just for the no deal. So that's downing tools for a few days in April and in November, preparing for those no deal scenarios this year. They've wasted, and that's their word, wasted £500 million on each occasion. That's £1 billion for one industry just preparing for the no deal. That doesn't account for what they haven't invested in. That doesn't account for the potential job closures or other changes that have been made in that industry and across other industries as the chilling effect of Brexit has really hit our economy. Mm.
Interesting you use the automotive industry as an example. Obviously, we're focusing particularly for the audio industry. A lot of people think, well, you don't have the issues of goods crossing borders and all of that sort of, I quote, red tape that people have been talking about. Perhaps it's more about increasing costs. But, you know, just imagine you're a music company and you're staging events in Europe and there's all sorts of issues. Almost every area affects every industry.
Absolutely. And certainly, you know, just taking the audio industry, it's a services industry. So what will the situation be? What rights and regulations do you enjoy? And how easy is it to undertake your day-to-day business across the EU just by virtue of the free movement of services which we have at the EU level? When that stops, when the UK leaves the EU, what does that mean for this industry? What does it mean in terms of the people that are employed? Do you have a lot of EU nationals over here or Brits abroad? What does it mean in terms of their employment rights in those countries and in that context? If they're going off to set up, as you said, a venue or an event and they're based in the UK and they're travelling to the EU to do that, can they do that after the 31st of October in the event of a no deal? Or, you know, looking further ahead under a new free trade agreement, can they do that then as well? All of that's still to be determined. But there's a lot of uncertainty for every industry that's out there. What do your contracts say about the arrangements you have in place with your customers? Does it talk about the EU as a whole? Is it about providing services across the EU? Will that then be impacted by Brexit, whether it's a deal or a no deal scenario? Really a whole range of different issues that need to be thought through for every industry, and the audio industry is no exception.
Well, let's talk practically. Let's drill into some of the details. We spoke there about the deal or the no deal and what that could likely look like. Explain to us, on, you know, whatever date this may happen, suggesting that we get a deal, what will that look like on the day almost?
Well, it might be quite an anticlimax, actually, because if we do get a deal, then going back to what I was saying before, what that means is, by and large, you have business as usual for most companies, and certainly for most companies in the audio industry. So that means that on the 1st of November, if you get a deal on 31st of October, come the 1st of November, you carry on pretty much as usual. The deal means that all the current EU laws are translated into UK law. So the UK has formally left the EU, but all the laws that apply today will apply on the 1st of November. And that will happen until the end of December 2020 under the current deal, by which point the ambition is to have a new trade deal in place and a new set of regulations to get used to. But the idea then is you just have one change at that point at the end of December 2020. So if we get a deal, actually it should be pretty much business as usual and something of a damp squib for most people, which I think would be probably quite welcome. But the big question, of course, is if we don't get a deal, what's the impact there?
Taking that a little bit further, so in the immediate short term, it probably won't look very different. And obviously, this is a bit of crystal ball gazing because we don't know what eventual, I suppose, the deal will look like in practice. But move it on a little bit forward, if you would. When do things start to change? When do you suspect that we will start to notice more of the impact?
Well, I think the big question is how quickly those negotiations move. So if we get a deal, in fact, even if we don't get a deal, the big question is, when do we get a new free trade agreement in place and what does that look like? And the current target is the end of December 2020. And if things move quickly, then you should get a flavour in the coming months as to what the shape of that new deal would look like and how it might impact on your industry. Now, free trade agreements are normally targeted primarily around free movement of goods, so moving products across borders easily and minimal tariffs and the sort of the usual things we've been hearing for the last 2 or 3 years. They don't often cover services, whereas, of course, that's a primary concern for the audio industry. And, of course, it's 80% of the UK's economy. So you'll start to see, I think, that being a much bigger part of the new free trade agreement and the new deal going forward. The question is, what does that actually look like in practice? And that's the big unknown. And that's actually where it's important for businesses and industries to have their voice heard about what it is they want to see in that deal and to make that case to government.
All right, then in terms of a no deal?
Well, in terms of a no deal, the key thing is to understand what that can mean for your business and your industry. Now, the audio industry covers a whole range of different companies and different industries. So whether you're producing podcasts, whether you're building venues, or whether you're producing radio programs themselves, all of which can affect you in a different way. And so actually the key thing is to sit down and understand what might change for me in my regulatory framework if we leave with a no deal. What will happen to the people that I employ? What will happen to the data that I might transfer between the UK and the EU? Have I made plans for that? And if it's not just your company, but actually those you rely on, are there others who are providing particular technical services or engineering services to you that may not be based in the UK, that may have to travel from the EU to the UK, normally, which would normally have happened very easily, but actually in a no-deal Brexit scenario would be much more difficult. So it's a question of looking not just at what happens to you and your business, but are your suppliers, are your customers ready? Have you thought about what the contracts say and whether you might be liable for things which just never occurred to you when you were writing the contract in the first place? From the very technical to the very sort of big picture issues, I think people need to sit down, wrap a wet towel around their head and start to think about what that might look like for them.
General tips, though, for doing business after Brexit. Where do you even start? And it's worth pointing out that I suppose a lot of companies would have been planning for this, or you would hope they would have been planning for this when we first suspected that we might leave and then we got an extension. Almost, what is the excuse for people not to have something in place?
Well, I think that's a very good point. And frankly, here at Phil Fisher, I was saying to colleagues and clients, listen, I think most people have either made their plans, possibly because they're in a heavily regulated industry like the financial services industry, and they therefore had to make those plans, or because they've done advanced planning for their board demanded it or their shareholders, or they've decided to roll the dice and take their chances. And so I thought there would be very few new queries after March this year. In fact, what I hadn't quite realised was that, of course, when you roll the dice and you take a chance, you're doing it on a basis of the risks that you know. And then I think most people took a view that Theresa May was not going to see the UK leave the EU without a deal. And so the risk they were taking in March was very different from the one they saw in July and August when Boris Johnson became Prime Minister. And ever since August, we've had a lot of queries of people who had taken that chance or decided that they wouldn't necessarily need to plan too extensively. And they've changed their mind either to finish off their planning or because the position of the EU has changed, position of the UK has changed, or just their calculation of the likelihood of leaving without a deal has changed. And so I think people's minds have really been focused in the last 2 or 3 months. And that planning that we talked about earlier, people have really started to do with a lot of effort and a lot of focus in the last 2 to 3 months.
Of course, our focus is on, you know, particularly British business, but the EU must be going through, and companies in the EU must be going through a very similar sort of curious about how they manage to do business with us after Brexit.
They are asking these questions as well. You're absolutely right. Where I think they are in a slightly stronger position is because, of course, it's in the UK's gift and interest to try and keep trade flowing as easily and as freely as possible. So where it's been in the UK's gift, it has tried to make some of the regulatory impacts of a no-deal Brexit and the potential havoc that may wreak, they've tried to reduce that to a minimum. So, for example, if you've got a particular product and it has to have a safety standard, the UK has said it will recognise EU safety standards for a period of months after Brexit. Similarly, if you've got an intellectual property issue or a trademark that you've registered, the UK has said it will recognise EU trademarks for a period after Brexit and allow you to transfer that into a UK system. All of these sort of examples of where the UK has tried to make life as easy as possible for businesses not only in the UK, but also operating and selling to the UK, because that's designed to keep the UK economy going after Brexit and to minimise the impact. So, yes, there will be some impact for those businesses in the EU trading into the UK, but much less so than those from the UK trading out into the EU.
In terms of then being practical going forward, as far as you can, what general tips do you have for doing business after Brexit? And this will be different, I imagine, the size of the company, the industry that you work in.
The main tip I always say is plan, because the amount of times I hear everyone saying, it's very difficult, it's very confusing, it's hard to know where Brexit will go, what will happen. I absolutely agree. But as we've been talking about today, in reality, there is just two potential options. One is there is a deal, in which case it's business as usual, until the end of December 2020, and there'll be a new arrangement then. But the second alternative is there is no deal. And we know what no deal looks like, more or less, in terms of the impact on regulation, on the impact of accessing the EU market, of selling your goods or your products online, if you've got customers in the EU. We know what a lot of this looks like, but it's just about sitting down with a wet towel around your head, trying to understand how it impacts on your business and your company, either with professional advice or with your own teams, getting that Brexit team together internally and just thinking through all the issues and how they may impact on you. And then you can decide how much preparation you actually want to do once you know what the issues are. You can decide whether you invest a lot, or in most cases, what's the minimal amount of things I need to do to be business ready on the 1st of November in the event of a hard deal Brexit. So that's really my main tip, is plan, because although it's complicated, there's a lot you can do to try to understand the impact and really minimise and mitigate the effects of a no-deal Brexit on your business, so you can continue to trade as normal, or as close to normal as possible, on the 1st of November.
OK, Andrew, I'm going to ask you some perhaps more specific related to the audio industry and questions. And the first is, you know, say, for example, audio companies in the UK are currently employing EU nationals on their staff, perhaps as employees or freelancers, as I'm sure many do in the UK. What will this mean? And they are, of course, UK-based. What will this mean for them? What will happen to those companies, to the staff? This is really all, I suppose, about the ending of freedom of movement and what that actually means.
So that's a great question, because people are often at the heart of businesses and industries, certainly those that we work with, and helping the businesses understand the obligations on them, and frankly helping their employees understand how to navigate this uncertainty of Brexit, is crucial for most firms. Now, the long and short of it is that if you are in the UK before the 31st of October, then deal or no deal, you will be able to stay in the UK after the 1st of November. You would need to apply at some point for a settled status, or what's called pre-settled status. It's free, it can be done online, especially if you have an Android phone. It's simply around submitting your details to the Home Office and applying for the relevant settled or pre-settled status. There's lots of guidance out there, including from the European Commission and from the UK government, about what your rights and what your interests are. It gets more complicated after the 1st of November and varies depending on whether there's a deal or a no deal. And by far the best thing to do is go to the .gov.uk website, which has all the details about how to apply and the circumstances as they'll apply to you, because often people are travelling with their families, they're travelling with, or they have dependents abroad, and when do they join them? All a very different set of circumstances. But to say the long and short of it is, if you're in place before the 31st of October, then you'll have a right to stay in the UK. You just need to make the applications for settled or pre-settled status. In the event of a no deal, it does get more complicated, but those who arrive after the 1st of November would still be able to stay in the UK until the end of December 2020. But if they want to stay beyond December 2020, they'd have to apply for what's called a temporary leave to remain, I think. Effectively gives you 3 years in the UK to live and work here as before. At the end of that period, you simply would have to apply for a working visa, which would be governed by the new laws to be implemented by Parliament. We don't know what those are yet, but you'd have to meet those criteria in order to remain beyond that period. But step by step, be here before the 31st of October, and for those working with your members in the audio industry who are here already, you should be in relatively safe ground. You just need to make those applications for the settled or pre-settled status.
Okay, in the second scenario then, UK audio company, perhaps you're currently partway through a contract with, say, a Swedish radio station. Does anything change here? And as well, if you want to renew?
Well, I think it depends on exactly what the contract is, what it's for, what the services you're providing. So I bring out my sort of lawyer stamp that says it all depends on the circumstances of the case and the contract. So the first thing to think through is, can I continue to perform my contract? If I'm providing services in the event of a no deal, am I able to continue to provide those services in the same way as I was before? And if not, what does that mean to the contract? Does it get to the very heart of that contract, in which case it may be the contract becomes void or voidable? Or is it just an element of the contract and actually you can put that bit to one side but carry on performing the rest of it? So it really depends on the circumstances you're in. You need to look at all those big contracts, really prioritise the ones that are most economically important to you or most important in terms of your client base and your delivery, and really work through those, normally with professional advice, frankly, to understand what the potential implications may be for you, how you can manage some of those risks, and how, if need be, you can get yourself out of a contract if it suddenly becomes very uneconomical to perform, and if that's possible.
We in the audio industry, we're great at audio, but in terms of trade negotiation policies, all this sort of stuff that you've been doing for many, many years is not really what we do. So practically speaking, almost give us a bit of hope. What should we be doing? You know, because you can get completely bogged down in all of this.
I think that's right. And that's what I come back to my sort of second and third recommendation, which is plan, just to understand what the potential impact may be on your business. And then really think through what the minimal steps are that you can take to the maximum effect. So if, for example, it's about performing a really big contract in Sweden, as we were talking about earlier, then what does that contract say? Do you need to do anything at all? If so, start the conversation with the people you have the contract with. See if you can work a way through it, or at least understand what the potential implications may be for you. So although Brexit is complicated, as I said, really, there's a deal or a no-deal scenario. And the no-deal scenario is the one that you really need to plan for. Because in a deal scenario, it should be business as usual, at least until the end of December 2020. But plan now and you can be prepared both for a no-deal scenario, but also for the future of what may lie beyond 2020 in the free trade agreement. If you get really ambitious, then as an industry, the Audio UK and the audio industry as a whole could think about what you want that future free trade agreement to look like. How do you want to be able to provide your services into the EU? If the UK is negotiating new free trade agreements around the world, what do you want those to look like in terms of giving you access to the markets to be able to sell your products and to make sure that you're competitive in those environments? So if you're feeling really ambitious, either a large company or an industry body, then think about what you want that future to look like and start to shape that now.
Andrew Hood, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Brexit Ready is produced by Audio UK, the trade association for UK independent radio and audio producers. More details from audiouk.org. All the guidance contained in this podcast series has been compiled in good faith and is correct at time of publication. We would always advise checking for latest details on a reputable website. For example, you might try www.gov.uk/Brexit. I'm Georgie Frost. Charlotte North is the producer. Thanks for listening.